Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 2 for Autumn Semester 2010. Lecture 19, delivered on November 3, 2010. The title of this lecture is Break-Even Analysis.
Today, Break-Even Analysis. This is a short topic, and it is also relatively straightforward. It's some basic algebra and some terminology still used to this day in businesses, small and large. The assumptions are a little bit questionable, perhaps, but they are still, it's still very popular. Begin like this. From an economic perspective, your costs can be divided into two major types. Your total cost is variable cost and fixed cost. The variable costs are the costs that vary with production level. And the fixed costs are, as it is implied, fixed. Now, I could write this in a sense, if you wanted to see it in function notation. The total cost is a function of Q, as a function of Q is variable cost, which is a function of Q, plus fixed cost, which is not varying with Q at all. And I won't trouble you with the any calculus. But generally speaking, we will assume that the variable cost is some value V times quantity. So it's a linear function. V times Q. So we can have the total cost is little V times Q plus fixed cost. Now, some companies are laden with fixed costs. Others are very light on fixed costs. There is no reason to believe that one way is better than another in any universal sense. However, you will tend to see certain tendencies of companies in certain industries, obviously. Now, the other part of this is your revenues. Your total revenue is going to be your price times your quantity. In other words, total revenue is a function of quantity as well. And the profit of the company, which is traditionally, by the way we used to do it is a small pie, but I don't use that so much anymore. Profit is your total revenue less your total cost. Nothing hard there. Nothing tough at all there. Now, then we can write this then as profit equals price times quantity less little v times q, the quantity, little v times q plus fc. Distributing the negative sign through, your profit is P times Q minus little V times Q minus FC. And we can gather terms together here. We have a Q occurring in these two terms. So the profit could be written as price minus variable cost per unit, quantity times Q less FC. Now, variously, I have always called this, that P minus V, unit margin. The book uses another term that I've seen before called contribution margin, and I'll stick to the terminology of the book the P, that little P minus V, the price per unit minus the variable cost per unit, is your unit margin. Now, if you remember from your happy days somewhere in the dark past, the slope intercept form of a linear equation is y equals mx plus b, where m is the slope and b is the y-intercept. If you look at this, that is a linear equation. P minus v is the slope of the profit line, and negative fc is the y-intercept of the profit line. Now, we should hope that P minus V is a positive number. So what we are essentially saying is that if we had a profit graphed on the vertical axis and output level Q on the, or sales level, I should say, sales units on the horizontal axis, the equation would look something like this. It would be, the equation would be profit as the dependent variable equals P minus V times Q plus FC, rather minus FC, duh. Negative FC is where this thing hits the profit axis. So your fixed costs sink their teeth in and show you how much in the hole you are in profit before you make a single unit. The larger your fixed costs are, the more in the hole you are. And then the slope of this line, this linear thing, is P minus V. The rise over the run is P minus V. Now, I'm not here to reteach you linear theory at all, but I am going to point out some notable things about this from a business perspective. This is a very simple model, but it actually is worthwhile to talk about here. P minus V, the contribution margin, and it's almost obvious, it's like a duh. If you look at P minus V, the larger P is relative to V, the higher your contribution margin is, the steeper that line is. So the higher your contribution margin is, the higher the difference between the unit price and the unit variable cost, the faster you're going to dig yourself out of your hole. But it's also the case that the wider that contribution margin is, the faster you fall into the hole. That's the part that is not often mentioned. The steeper P minus V causes the profit line to be, the faster you'll come out of the hole of fixed costs, but also the faster you'll fall into the hole if your sales decline. So this becomes almost a linear version, a linear perspective on risk of the company. Some companies would have low fixed costs and a very small margin between P and V. Price minus variable cost would be small. In other words, if we were to show that kind of a company, low fixed costs and small contribution margin, P minus V. Notice that this company has to crawl. Every unit it sells brings it a little bit further to the point where it is finally making a profit. It's a slow slog to production level that gets you out of your hole. But at the same time, it's a slow slog backward that gets you back into the hole in that kind of a case. Now, let me show you the other four versions of this real quick here. This is high fixed cost and large contribution margin. See how fast it rises out? Big margin between price and variable cost. Comes out of a large fixed cost very rapidly. And then we have this animal right here, where you have large fixed costs and a very small P minus V. That's not a very happy place to be. Takes a long time to get to profitability. Takes a long time to get to profitability in a company like that. And then that's a curved line. That's not supposed to be. Let me try that again. There. And then the last one, which I'll want to put over here. Let me get this one off the board. And put the last one here. Which would be a low fixed cost and a low and a high and large P minus V. Now that's of course the most desirable of all. Light on the fixed costs and very wide spread between price and your unit variable cost, price per unit and your unit variable cost. These are the four different scenarios. You'll see companies in all kinds of configurations like this, various degrees. Now, hearkening back to Monday night, some of you in here, how many of you in here were at the ADM presentation on Monday night, the FMA? Were any of you in there? Yeah, a few of you were. Do you remember, do you happen to remember what the net income and the sales were of ADM last fiscal year? Now, I'm impressed. That was revenue. And do you remember what the net income was? It was $2 billion. Now, ADM has fixed costs, obviously, but they also have large variable costs, the cost of purchasing grain, brokering, and all that. So there you have an interesting combination, an ADM type of company, where its net margin is 2 divided by 62, which is a very small number. So that's a company, you would imagine a company like that would have high fixed costs because they have grain elevators, they have terminals, they have barges, they have all these fixed expenses, and they also pay pretty serious money for what they buy at the farm gate. And then they don't sell it for much more on a unit basis as they pull it out the door. So there's an example of a company that would probably, if I were to guess, and it would be speculation, it would be this graph over here on the far right. So in a company like that, you are going to see an extraordinary revenue relative to net income. Each one of their transactions doesn't get them a whole lot. But taken in the aggregate, if that company can get big enough, it will be a powerhouse, a veritable monster in its industry, which ADM is. Even in a case like that, you see, ADM is actually, in some ways, a very stable company because it covers its fixed costs, and every time it sells something, it gets a little bit of a contribution margin out of it. But now that it is in profitable territory, and it is a profitable company, it's far enough out there that small fluctuations from day to day, month to month, even year to year, are not going to cause that company to have any particularly large financial distress. So this picture right here, high FC and small P minus V, might seem like a bad combination, but it's actually, if the company can survive to a large size, that's a hellacious kind of enterprise. This would also be true in an industry like oil, hydrocarbon products. The truth of the matter is that the typical oil company has insanely large fixed costs. It also does not make that much on contribution margin. But because they are so large, so huge, that day to day, month to month, year to year swings in prices and demand and all of that are not going to cause those companies to suffer very much at all. They can survive once they have grown to a large size. They're virtually indestructible. The idea of too large to fail might not be true for banks, but for industrial giants, it might be. But then you see that cast against companies, automakers, which seem to have suffered rather bad fates. The problem is there's a difference. An automaker would not look like this profile. Let me ask you, which one of the profiles would you speculate would an automaker look like? What would you guess? Take a stab. If I were to number these, 1, 2, 3, and 4, which one would an automaker be more like? Bingo. Yeah. Steep fixed costs, but darn decent margins. And that means that when demand turns south, they, as fast as they can grow to large size, they can be eaten up and destroyed in fairly short order. Hence, you could have a company, and I believe, and I'm sure I'll get something ugly here. Oh, how nice. Someone put Professor Kring and gave me one of these. What is, oh, this is probably poison. What? Oh, great, now I got it on me. Yeah, it looked like Paris Hilton at the airport. Look like Charlie Sheen hanging out in, on the other side of the bathroom beating on the door. Where's my watch, man? Hey, it is good. It's sour as hell. What the hell? That'll teach me to do that. Okay. Oh, well, let me try my coffee. Yeah, it's still sour. Okay. But I believe it was GM had gathered tens of billions of dollars in reserve over a period of the decades that the company had been in existence. And it took less than a decade to plow that company's reserves to zero and then into negative territory. That gives you an idea of the rise and then how fast the fall can be, especially in a bad market and especially with bad management that seems to want to find all the wrong reasons for the problems that the company has. Now, taking that out of the picture here and going back to the basics, where this profit line hits the horizontal axis is called the break-even point. More technically, the break-even sales level. So in this, in number one, break-even would be right here, where the profit line crosses the horizontal axis from negative to positive profit. Break-even sales would be there, unit sales would be there, there, and there. Now, for some companies, break-even will be at a low level of output. And for other companies, break-even would be at a very high level of output. Now, back in the day, when I was teaching these finance classes long ago, it's kind of difficult to talk about it these days. Some of you come, actually, more than a few of you, when I taught at Ohio State, it wasn't quite this way, and at some of the colleges I've taught at over the years, it might be more the case this way. Did any of you grow up in a community where there were barber shops? I mean, just the ones with the swirly pole and all that kind of stuff, and you'd go in there. And those were kind of a cool place. And it was a place where you could get a shave. I mean, there was this one barber in town. He'd always make the young boys at about the age of 10 feel real manly by shaving their face for the first time. Then they were his customers for life, unless they really freaked when the hot towel went down on them and all that. But the question would be, how in the world could a barber in a small town survive? He doesn't have that many customers in a day. Maybe 5, 10, something like that. 20 on a good day. How could someone like that survive? Look at these break-even points, and you might get an idea of how it works. That in some kinds of businesses, you don't have to have a lot of business to hit your break-even point. In other words, to get to the point where you have profitability. As long as your profit margin is high and your fixed expenses are low, you can actually run a business without having a huge amount of customers come through the door on a given day. In other enterprises, though, those companies can't survive unless they're selling millions of units a year of their product. And it all has to do with the configuration of the intercept and the contribution margin, the slope of the profit line. Now down to the brass tacks of this. To find the break-even point, remember that profit as a function of Q is the contribution margin, price minus variable cost, times quantity, minus fixed cost. Now, if I were to call 0 profit at a very special place called the break-even equals 0. So we can say 0 equals P minus V at this very special place, Q star break even minus FC. That is a specific value of Q. That's why I'm making all that fuss with little notations around it. It's not the variable anymore. It's a specific value of the function. And then we can take it through the grinder. Fixed cost is a contribution margin minus times break even. And then we can have the fixed cost over the contribution margin will be your break even point. Now, this was about 5 times around the barn, get to the outhouse where the payoff is. That's the money shot right there. You have to be able to get to that level of output given your company and its costs for you to be able to say we are at break-even. So all you would do is go through and find your fixed costs, find your variable cost, unit variable cost, and then essentially figure out what your price is. So I'm going to do this 2 ways. The first one. This is the forward problem. Take the case of a price taker company. In other words, a company that doesn't control its price. There is a prevailing price in the market, and this company takes that price. It can produce as much as it wants at the prevailing price. It would obviously not produce an infinite amount because its marginal cost is rising against a fixed marginal revenue, which is the price, but nonetheless, we can say, suppose unit variable cost is 18 cents and the price at which the company can sell its product is 40 cents. Fixed costs is $400,000. What is the break-even output level? What is the break-even sales level? This would be a company that sells some kind of candy or trinket, possibly at the wholesale level. Well, the first thing I would do, just, and you don't have to do this so much, but have you been in a course yet where they showed you the idea of markup? Have you hit that yet, the idea of markup? Well, it's so popular to use the term markup. And I could actually say, well, 40 cents over 18 cents, work that out, 40 cents over 18 cents, your markup is 222%. So in other words, you are marking your good up by 122% over the variable cost of producing it. 122% over the variable cost of producing it. So I would take minus one on that. Now that seems like, well, that's obscene. No, that's actually fairly modest. Markups, you really have to have a good markup to be able to survive. And that it's kind of a shocker when you see a markup that like that and realize how much it's still going to take to get to break even on a company like this. So that's just kind of a side little calculation. Now I'm going to go through the grinder. Price minus variable cost. I'm going to do that one real quick here just as a scratch work. 40 cents minus 18 cents. And that's 22 cents. Okay, now I can do my break-even output level. And in this case, it would be $400,000 divided by 0.22. Is that right? Yeah. And I will get 1,000,000, well, let me make sure. Yeah, 1,818,000 182 units. Now here's a small matter. Don't forget it though. Don't round. Round up. When you get your break even, don't round. Round up. Say that again. Well, that's just how many the percent over the cost your price is. It's 122%. That's just because technically to get the percent change would be end minus begin over begin. Do you remember that thing that I showed you, that formula right there? Do you remember that? That's the same as saying end over begin minus begin over begin, which is the same as end over begin minus one. It's just another way of doing the same thing. I tried to pull that fast one, and you asked me about it. Darn you. You can subtract one to get a percentage change as well. If you do it, just end over begin minus one. I was just kind of doing a quick, fast thing there, doing it my way to sneak it in there. Now, back over here, you round up whether that had been, in this case, it was 1818188.8. So you have rounded up, but round up whether or not the number after the decimal is above or below 5, because the number that you want is a whole number, and you want the first number that zeros or makes positive the profit. So the first output level at which I will realize positive profit, in this case, would be 1,818,182 units. That would be the first place, the first output level at which I would realize profitability in this operation. In this case, you see that this company has to be huge in terms of output level. Even with that dramatic markup, what seems like a rather staggering amount of, you know, they're screwing people. They make them at a variable cost of 18 cents and then they're charging 40 cents. That's a ridiculous margin. Well, yeah, it looks like it, but even at that margin, that contribution margin, look how many units it takes to make that company profitable. So in a case like this, you would see, well, that's an interesting thing. Now let's take the other side of it. Suppose that we saw a company that had market power, what is called in economics a price seeker, a company that has the ability to make its price instead of just taking a price that's prevailing in a market. A company that has essentially, to some extent, a monopoly or some kind of power position where it can set a price instead of just eating the price that's out there. Let's do a problem like that one. A company has fixed costs of $1.5 million. Unit variable cost is $3. If the company wants profitability, no further out than I just realized the number that I was going to use is not going to be good. It can be confusing, so my numbers will be a little whacked here. 250,000 units. What price should it charge? Here's a company that can actually make a determination on a price. And let's see if it's realistic what we are going to have come out of this. In the case of that formula, we see that fixed cost over price minus variable unit variable cost is our break even. Okay? Now, all we do is fill in numbers that we know and see what we don't know in a case like this. In this problem, Well, we know that the fixed costs are going to be $1,500,000. The price we don't know. So that's going to be a P minus a unit variable cost of $3. And we want that to be equal to 250,000 units. So now we are going to solve, and we'll have to do it algebraically, we'll solve for the price that would achieve this goal. Now, if I work this out, I would say 1,500,000 equals 250,000 times the quantity price minus $3. You see how I did that? Let's make sure you're okay. It's going to be the quantity. I'm just going to multiply both sides by P minus $3. That'll clear it off the denominator of the left side and make it part of the multiplication, make it a multiplication on the right side. Now we can rock around the clock here. We can say $1,500,000 equals 200, and using the distributive law, distributive property of multiplication over subtraction, we can say 250,000 times P minus 250,000 times 3, which is 750,000. So we've gotten that far. Are you okay on that? Make sure you see that. I'll erase the original problem here so I can get up to the top of the board for you in the back to see this. Now I can say 2 million. Well, I'm going to add 750,000 to both sides, so that'd be 2,250,000 equals 250,000 P. Whoops, using black for that. God, I hope this comes out because I had to use a number that I wasn't expecting to have to use. Now we can divide both sides by 250,000. There we go. It does come out. What did you get? Did you get a number? Nine what? Oh, I said it. $9. So they will have to charge $9 a unit to achieve break-even under the circumstances that we have given them. If they want to break even at 250,000 units of output, then they are going to have to charge $9 per unit for the product. So in other words, their markup is going to be, well, actually, their markup would be 9 minus 3, 6 over 3, 200% markup. So they have to have about a 200% markup over their variable cost to be able to do this. Do you see what I just did there? They're going to jump their price $6 above variable cost. The price will be $6 more than variable cost. 6 divided by 3 is 2. That's 200%. That's their markup, essentially. And that's actually not too bad. That sounds, well, that's a little bit of a reach. No, that's actually not crazy at all. And that would be how, if you were the price setter, you would figure out, okay, given our production, where we want to go, where we want to go in production before we get to profitability, we're going to have to charge $9 a unit for our product. That's the story. So on Wednesday during the quiz, I'll give you one each way on this. One finding the break-even output, and the other way finding the break-even. There are some problems in the back of the chapter where you can do this same exercise different ways. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.